Welcome back, folks. So all of you out there, you wanted to see my face. I got complaints that the microphone was in front of my face all the time. So I bought this $450 Audio-Technica headset just for you guys. On today's show, we talked about recessed cans. We did one of our deep dives. That's right. Can you believe that there's guys out there that have spent so much time as lighting dorks that we can talk about recessed cans for 25 minutes? It's unbelievable, Greg.
Fun topic, isn't it?
I loved it. I had a great time. So if you're a lighting dork or you're new to the business or whatever it is and you want to hear two other lighting dorks talk about recessed cans, this is the episode for you. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Highlight LED Lighting. Go to Highlight, that's H-Y-L-I-T-E, L-E-D, lighting.com, baby. HighlightLEDLighting.com, Greg.
They are a family-owned, innovative LED lighting manufacturer. They have high-quality LED retrofit solutions.
And Scott's going to throw that up on there for the YouTube viewers. So if you're on YouTube, watch there. It's coming up. So what are we talking about with Highlight today, Greg?
I was getting into it. Yeah, so we've got compact fluorescent replacements or LED replacements for compact fluorescent lamps. Now, from my own experience, I've mentioned Highlight in the past, and they were one of the first people I saw that came out with a lamp that could replace a plug-in CFL in terms of bypassing the ballast or actually using the ballast. They have GX23 bases, and they have G24 bases that are universal for 2-pin and 4-pin. So they really have done it right. They have a lot of good options. The mounting they take into account, different Kelvin temperatures, and just a great overall company to look at unique retrofit solutions for the LED market.
You know what? Those CFL replacements, a lot of people say, no, you know what? I think they're a good economical option for a client. You know what I mean? You got someone out there, they just want to save some energy. They just want to get a little rebate. That's a great way to do it without having to do any labor, without any disruption. You just change those lamps out. I think it's a real big part of the mix, eh? Don't you?
Oh, I think so for sure. And the other part to mention about them is they have a variety of wattages. A lot of people have one lamp and they say this replaces a 13 to a 42 watt. There's no way it does. They've got multiple ones for the existing wattage so they can match it up, and they actually have thought it through and done it right for sure.
It's highlightledlighting.com, folks. Also, the links to their stuff is on our website. And this episode of the show is in association with and brought to you by, as all of them are, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to naild.org where the lighting dorks hang out. Nailed.org and come down to our convention in Reno. This actually might be released after the convention, so we were already there. Who knows? But thank you for listening, folks. We're always grateful to you guys, and enjoy the recessed can deep dive. What's going on, Greg? It's getting lonely on this podcast, just me and you.
We've been doing a lot of them lately. The trade show season, though, is coming up, and we're going to, four or five of them, and we're going to have a lot of content recorded at those shows, live in person, which is always more fun. You and I will still be part of it, but we'll have somebody else sharing their time with us.
But we'll be looking very grateful to them when that happens. So what do you want to talk about today, man? You want to talk about recessed cans?
Yeah, well, so we've been doing the deep dive series or whatever we're calling it, but it's just an easy name to say. And I think recessed can deep dive would be necessary for our industry because it is a common fixture in commercial marketplace. You and your market call it a pot light, which is a totally different thing here in the U.S., but it's a recessed can.
You call it a can light, so why don't we drop can light, pot light, and go recessed can?
That's what recessed can. I don't call it a can light. I call it a recessed can. All right. So recessed can light. So if a lot of applications have it, so you need to figure out if you're going to replace it to LED or if you're going to install them in the first place with LED, you need to figure a few things out. So we're going to take the stance of trying to retrofit one that's existing. So is that common, first of all, in your marketplace?
Yeah, for sure.
You see a lot
for
of recessed cans?
Okay. Tons.
In lobbies and hallways and offices.
Everywhere,
it can be all over the place.
Everywhere.
Conference rooms, things like
that.
So let's talk it through. When you look at a recessed can, the first thing I always note and try to note is the size. And by size, I mean how many inch diameter. It can be 2-inch, 4-inch, 6-inch. 8-inch, 10-inch, 12-inch. It can be a variety of sizes.
It can be square.
It can be square. So you shape and size, right? You need to know that. And how do you measure the diameter when it's 10 feet in the air?
I guess.
You gotta guess. Is that great? Two deep dives. No, we talk about it. We're just going to take a guess at it. But you have to, because you can't really get up to it a lot of times. Mm-hmm. If you can get up to it and you do measure it, it can be deceiving, because sometimes you measure from the lip of it. Mm-hmm. And from lip to lip, it can be 8 inch, but it's actually a 6 inch can.
I'm right like 98% of the time.
And I'll take that too. That's about where I'm at. I might be 97. But for the most part, right.
Yeah.
If it's about 10 feet up, you can kind of look at what is surrounding it too, to help you.
Sure.
Kind of gauge where it would be. And a lot of times they're in tiles. So you can look at a 2x2 tile and say, what would about 6 inches in that 2x2 section look like?
I use ceiling tiles all the time to measure rooms. All the time.
Yeah, you just count them.
Boom, 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 boom. Right? All the time, man. It's the easiest
way to do it.
That and the cinder blocks on the wall to count the ceiling height. If you don't know the ceiling height, you count the cinder blocks. They're all 8 inches. There you go.
Yep. So you need to know the size. You need to know the shape. That all makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what bulb is in there? Now, again, as with any deep dive we do, we need to know what they have existing. So what are in recessed cans right now? Compact fluorescence, HID, and incandescent and halogen. Or screw and CFLs can be in them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or LED is which way you're going, but we're assuming it's not LED.
Sometimes mercury vapor, big guy.
Well, that's an HID category.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. I'm trying to be a hot shot here, so.
Yeah, you're pretty hot there. So you take those and you figure out what bulb is in there.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, so let's take the different bulb types. Again, going back to compact fluorescence, a lot of them are plug-in when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another hint, by the way, of how you can tell the diameters. You understand what bulb is in there, and you say, well, there's an inch beyond that bulb, and it's a 26-watt quad.
Yeah, or a triple twin, a 32-watt triple twin tube or whatever. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yep, so you can see what's beyond if it's laying horizontal. You need to know how it's mounted. Is it vertical? Is a socket at the top? Is a socket on the side? Is there one lamp?
Just going to say the big thing for HID and for CFL is to know if it's vertical or if it's horizontal. It makes a big difference in the light output. That if it's horizontal, you basically lost half the light from the lamp.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at, if you know if it's a 32-watt twin tube or whatever, a triple twin tube, and it's vertically mounted, then you know that there's some good coefficiency going of utilization going on with that reflector that's in there. If it's horizontally mounted, you probably lost half the light. So you just have to down. That's how you're measuring for the replacement item you're gonna recommend to the customer.
There's even one more nasty boy that I've run into recently, and I've been doing it long enough. I would have thought I would have seen it more, but it's angle mounted.
What?
Have you seen that in a recessed can? Yeah, I've seen a metal halide that's angle mounted in a can.
The only time I've ever seen that is when you have that half eye where it's blocking half of it.
Yeah, it's not even that though. That's what's odd about it. It's just the way the bulb is screwed in is at an angle to the set.
What brand is it? Did you figure out the brand of that thing?
No, I just ripped that out. Get rid of it. So you do need to know the orientation of where the socket is placed.
Sure.
All right, that all makes sense. The color of the can too can matter. You know, is it a silver reflector, a white reflector? Is there a trim? Is there anything unique about it that you need to note and can change appearance? Sometimes there's hanging things from it. I don't know if that's not the right term, but like a little lens that drops down.
Sure. Like sometimes you see those ones with the screws on it and it's got the piece of glass that's frosted, or it's got some weird reflector in it or something, or it's an eyeball trim that they're pointing at the wall or something like that mm-hmm. becomes into play when you're thinking about retrofitting it. The other thing I look at is the condition of the ceiling around it. Is there cracks in the drywall that maybe a bigger, wider trim retrofit kit would just solve that problem real quick? It would just cover that. Another thing that you run into is sometimes, I don't know if you've run into this, but sometimes the drywaller will putty over top of the can part so that there's this layer of plaster around the thing, and when you go to take it out or retrofit it, you rip out all this plaster, falls down with it. Have you ever encountered that?
I don't think I have, but
you haven't done a lot of homes, probably.
No, not at all.
Right. So we've actually been picking up some, like, you know, those Mr. Potlight guys or whatever, right? Or the potlights in your basement. We've actually picked up a couple jobs where some of these big homes have 300 potlights in them, 300 recessed cans.
Can, recessed can lights.
Recessed can, not potlights. They're not growing dope, but some people are. But so they have like 300, 500 recessed cans in these huge houses. And a lot of those guys are, you know, running halogen lamps and they want to go LED or gals. And so we've been picking up a couple of those gigs. And we found that sometimes they literally, like, they put the recessed can up and then the drywall gets cut in after and it doesn't fit perfectly and they plaster right over it, dude.
Gross.
Yeah, and then you got to, like, get in there with an X-Acto knife or whatever you call it in the States, like a really sharp knife. You have to cut all the plaster out. Oh, man. It's so messy and nasty, and the customers hate it. But it is what it is. So that's another issue.
That's true, and that is the correct term, finally. We agree on X-Acto knife is the right way to say it.
Okay.
So voltage. You need to know the voltage. And there can be low-volt can, recess cans, 12-volt. It can be 120, it can be 277. A lot of times you can tell by the lamp source that's in there. If it's an MR16, for example, you can't always tell because it can be a GU10 120 volt. But
that's not an MR16. That's a GU10.
What is that? Still an MR16 GU10.
Yeah, don't be a lighting dork. It's actually, just call it a GU10 and an MR16. That's the terminology.
Okay. All right, Dr.
Because then, okay, so. But I mean, then you have an E26 too, MR16.
Nobody has those, but sure.
So MR16 is just for all you lighting dorks that are not lighting dorks. It's just mirrored reflector and 16/8 of an inch wide, right?
Yes.
Right? But it could also be a PAR 16.
Could be.
Right? So an E26 MR16 could also be an E26 PAR 16, and it's the same bulb, is it not? Or can be very similar to each other.
Yeah, we don't.
So don't dork out on me, buddy. It's an MR16 and a GU10. Okay, thank you.
All right, fine. So it could be a GU10 or an MR16 in that can, and from the ground, it looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
That GU10 looks like an MR16. It is an MR16, but it looks.
I can
like
tell by looking at it that what it is though, because the GU10 has a larger capsule than the MR16. The capsule. Where the filament is, and an MR16 is a lot smaller than a GU10. So if you look at it from the side, you can see that bigger capsule, and that means it's 120 volt for all you guys out there. Look at
it. So
grab
if you don't
one.
Know,
go grab
send a picture to Mike, and he'll tell you what it is.
I'll tell you what it is. Yeah. So, but the capsule's
or you pull
bigger
it down.
It. Yeah. Oh, you pull it down.
Yeah. So a screw-in light bulb, obviously incandescent halogen, is typically going to indicate 120 volt.
Sure.
But a compact fluorescent, which is one of the most common in a metal halide HID type source, you don't know the voltage. So I always go and assume in 277 just to be safe.
Okay.
You know, I know there's applications where they're not, but I just want that covered so I don't have that thing come up because it can come up in this application for sure. So know the voltage. Figure out the lamp type. Figure out the size. The other thing, as with all lighting, you need to figure out how it's controlled. Is it a sensor? Is it a switch? Is it a dimmer?
Mm.
Dimmer is a big issue. You know, if it's a dimmer, now you need to figure out how it's dimmed because a lot of the retrofits for LED are 0 to 10 volt dimming. And if you're going to put like a whole insert in, some of them are line voltage. So you need to know that because if they want to continue to dim it, you obviously need to match up to what they have.
This came up today just on dimmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I know the answer, but a TRIAC dimmer is just a normal dimmer, right?
Yeah.
And 0 to 10 volts, one thing, and then TRIAC is a different. That's the traditional type of dimming we do, right? Is that right?
Yes. As I understand, yes, it is.
Yeah,
okay. I'm not a dimming expert, but yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So when it comes to the dimming, are you ever putting in a new wire to do the 0 to 10 volt on these cans?
If they have dimming now and it's line voltage, typically not. I'll find a line voltage solution.
Yeah.
But if they want to add dimming and they don't have dimming, then I'll do 0 to 10. And with anything, you try to do 0 to 10. You almost need to get like a separate power pack up in the ceiling versus trying to get it down to the switch. Because to run that 0 to 10, at least in Minnesota, you have a code where you have to run it separately from the line.
Yeah.
The line voltage already has its MC going down with it, tube or sleeve going through. So you need to run it separate. So try to fish that down a wall. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So you almost need to do a wireless solution a lot of times for 0 to 10. You need a power pack up in the ceiling with a wireless controller for it.
Yeah, and then you got batteries involved and
all sorts of fun. So you have to know if it's dimmed and how it's dimmed, line or low. Kelvin temperature. Always know Kelvin temperature. Because if you put a can in, that's a totally different Kelvin.
How good's your eye for Kelvin temperature? Do you need a comparison beside it?
It's decent. I'd say I'm 96%.
96, eh? The only I'm 100% if I have one other color in the room beside it.
True. That always helps.
Like if they have 841K fluorescent tubes and then I look, that's 3000K. When it's on its own, sometimes 3027, I can get a little bit confused at that end. But I know 5000K, 841. The 35s, the 3000 down, I can kind of, it's tough.
Yeah, it does get tough. And you need to note that because if you put in something that's not the color they're used to, as again with any lighting, that can cause issues. And you want to avoid issues.
Issues.
You want to sell these things and move on.
Like I said to my I said to my guys yesterday, doing a lighting project's like pulling off a heist. Mm-hmm. Watch Ocean's 11, okay? And then just insert all their planning, insert the planning for your lighting job. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to go pull off a heist. And when you leave, you get your money. That's how it works, boys. What is the heist about? What are we going to do? We're going to do this and this, and the lift's going to arrive. And then the guy's going to get there. The materials are going to already be there for him. And then the customer's already going to know, and he's going to know the area he's going to start in. And da 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 da. And if this goes wrong, this happens. Da, da, and then at the end, it's like, pick up the recycling, get the check. Da, 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 the heist is done.
Right.
It's a heist.
I like it. So do the heist. Figure out the Kelvin temperature. The other thing is the environment that it's mounted in or installed in. Is it indoor? Mm-hmm. Is it outdoor? Is it wet location, damp location? It could be in a shower with direct water to it. You need to know that. Is it in a sauna? That's very important to know. Because if it's in a sauna, I probably wouldn't mess with LED. So you have to note this thing and make sure that what you're going to install meets the requirements that it is being installed in. Because it's not one size fits all or one type fits all with this application.
Don't be an amateur.
Don't be an amateur.
Know the application.
Exactly. The condition that you mentioned before, the sockets, the reflectors, what shape they're in. A lot of these compact fluorescents have sockets that are very brittle, the plug-in especially. Mm-hmm. And over time, all the replacements they've had to do and the ballast changes and everything makes it difficult to just slam a bulb in there. Even though it's a popular solution and it's a lower cost than putting a insert type, it can be something to be aware of because that can really factor into how the end product will look and how
you know
it'll perform.
What? There's not enough 2700K inserts out there.
It's tough to find in a 120 volt, no problem.
Yeah.
But to do your commercial grade, and that's a problem with, I think this industry, a lot of people think this 120 volt little rabbit ear thing is going to fit. Don't quit that. That's for houses. We don't do that in commercial. We do the full enclosed insert. Get those rabbit ears out of there. Get a nice spring clip that can slam in there and make 27K. I agree. 27K is not as common as it should be. It's always 3K, 4K, and 5. Not even 5K. 5K is actually hard to find, too.
Yeah.
It's 3K and 4K and 35K. But I agree. 27K you need.
What about I also really think that we need that bigger, I'm going to lose my word. You know that, is it baffle? Like I want longer baffles. I want that LED. I want the ability.
Deep recessed.
Recess it up higher, manufacturers.
Yeah. Give me, too flat.
Yeah. It's like the flat panel out. I'm not doing it. Okay. So we get a half inch, you get 3/4 of an inch recessed. I want it like a good inch and a half up in there. So when you're looking across the ceiling, you don't see that flat panel. Now I'm not saying all the time some customers want that super flat, slim style. I hate it personally. I hate all flat panels. But I want it to be recessed up in there. A little thing. And I think that the insert is one of the best applications for an LED retrofit. I think it's like it just plays to LED really well. There's lots of room for the driver and the heat dissipation and that. I think it's a great application. I just want those baffles a little bit longer. Manufacturers out there, if you're listening to me, lower Kelvin temperature, give me that 27K and give me a higher baffle.
I agree. And that's always a question and concern for me is when I install those, I look at the manufacturers that make them, and I would say majority are a half inch recessed. Yeah. And, you know, there's probably something to how they're made to do that, but put them up there, put them up higher, because it looks so much better when it's there. I understand you might lose some light dispersion by recessing it up higher, but you can't install glare bombs in these applications. And that's what they are when they're surface mount lensed. So don't do that. Agree. I agree. All right. We're in agreement there. Is there emergency built in, backup built in? Ooh. Again, another thing with all indoor fixtures, as you're looking at in commercial environments, you need to understand their emergency lighting system. I've seen a lot of recessed cans that have emergency built in them. Usually you'll see a little red button in it that will indicate that, or even next to it. Sometimes it's a separate little box that's next to the can that is your emergency lighting. So if you're going to put a retrofit in that doesn't have emergency backup, that's trouble. You need to address it. You need to be aware of it. You need to plan for it. And if you do put an emergency backup into one of those inserts, plan to spend about 3 to 4 times more than a standard price.
And the problem is that, does that affect the whole retrofit because the one you wanted to use doesn't have an emergency backup on it?
Absolutely, it does. And that's a problem. You know, there are people coming out with little kits that you can do and things like that.
Yeah.
Anytime I run into that, what I try to do is say, all right, where's the exit sign? Can I put bug eyes on that thing?
Yeah, sure.
Can I avoid having to keep this backup on the can? Because that adds way too much to the cost, I think. So, but obviously you need to note that. A common item that you always need to be aware of is what type of ceiling is it in? Now, we've indicated that a lot of them are in lay-in fixtures, but they can be in sheetrock. They can be in metal. They can be in soffits. And if they are, you also have to know, can you cut a bigger hole? Mm-hmm. If you decide that you want to go with a bigger one, are you physically able to actually do that in that space?
How often do you actually, like, let's say it's one of those retrofit remodel style that you can pull the whole can out of the ceiling and then it hangs there. How often do you pull those out and just put a whole new thing in?
Most of the time now. I mean, we used to do a lot more lamps and things, and with all the socket issues and all that go with compact fluorescents, especially metal halide, not as bad because it's an Edison based screw and socket.
Yeah, sure.
But those plug-in sockets, we're typically doing inserts.
For MR16s, those are the worst.
MR16s, yeah. We don't run into those a lot. I mean, it's the only time is an apartment complex.
Yeah.
You know, in a residential type atmosphere, at least for me. There are probably some buildings that have them, conference rooms and things, but most part, it's 6-inch, 8-inch, and 10-inch is what I see.
You're rocking it out there, are you?
Well, we're trying. So, yeah, I agree with that. This is an item that I'm not a recess can expert, even though we're here doing a deep dive on it.
Ooh.
This IC rating and non-IC. Can you tell me what that's all about?
So from my opinion of it, so IC rated would be for a ceiling that has insulation in it. And that's got to do with the vapor barrier and condensation of water. If you're pulling out that's what I asked you about pulling the whole housing out. I don't like to pull out the housing for that exact reason, because sometimes there's a vapor barrier and like a clear plastic vapor barrier that you install over top of it before you put the insulation on top. And that's why I like to work with the existing housing that's there, just so I don't compromise any of those ratings. And then someone has condensation buildup in their ceiling because of that. One of the things I do with MR16s is I remove the pull it out, you remove the transformer, and then you run GU10 socket through it, or an E26 socket through it, and you screw in an E26 MR16 and then put the trim back on and up it goes. That's one solution. But I don't like to monkey around you can even on the new construction style recessed can, you always have to be able to access ballasts. It's part of the law. That's the way these things are made. So you can pull the can out and you can reach in and get the ballast out and disconnect it and then put that can back in. Then you don't mess with any of those ratings on the ratings This is my belief. I could be wrong here on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. My belief is that the rating has to do with everything outside where the light source is and how it interacts with the air around it when it comes to IC and that sort of thing. So I like to leave that when I can in homes, especially where there's going to be insulation. So that's what that's about.
Got it. So something you need to be aware of again, another item.
Particularly so, if you're retrofitting a lot of homes, like that's very key because you could cause a lot of damage in someone's home if you don't, because even if it says IC rated, there may be a vapor barrier put in above it and you got to be careful that you don't mess with that too much. You got to know what you're doing in that situation. And when it comes to insulation and IC, you have to know that what you're doing is right. Otherwise you could cause that homeowner or that business some problems down the road.
Yep. And as you're dealing with any recessed fixture, you do need to know the plenum depth or how much room there is to work with and above the ceiling.
Sure.
Because if you have, no room, you have to assess, how much room there is, because there are recessed cans that are shallower.
Yeah, but you know what? Most of the deployed technology out there is going to have a higher depth than LED.
Yes.
So I usually assume that there's room there because even a 4-inch or 3-inch pot light is going to have a 3 or 4 inch recessed can. Legacy is going to have 4 inches of depth above it for sure, at least. And then if it's remodeled, even more, because you have to pull it down and pull it out. So usually I would say that you're safe to assume that there's lots of room if you see an MR16 or PL13. Two PL, whatever, compact fluorescent or HID. Yep. You're going to have some room up there.
You're right. And that means
you can fish wires. You can fish wires up there if you have to for your 0 to 10 volt because there's room. So, yeah.
And then how do you access the fixtures is something you have to understand as well. And this is more in like churches and things where I see a lot of times the only way to get that recessed can is to go up and above and pull it versus pulling it from underneath.
Yeah, a lot of times that
can factor in.
Yeah, churches are always fun, especially because some of them have really high ceilings. And some of them will have those 500-watt Q halogen lamps and stuff.
Yep.
That's always a fun application. What do you replace LED with that? You got your own little kit, don't you?
Yeah, we have some kits and retrofits. And there's a variety of things you can do. But it gets difficult with that because the light output is tough to match a 500-watt. So a lot of it's just making sure customers understand how much light they're going to get, testing it out in their application, seeing if it's going to work.
And a lot of them have lighting control systems that won't work with LED.
Right. That's a big hassle for sure.
Yeah. And if you're saying, okay, you're going to get this payback if you pull out those 250 watt halogens and put in this, and then their lighting control system, they got a laser light show when they go to dim for the whatever Christmas or whatever they're doing with their lighting controls, and it causes problems. Those churches are tough with that. Have you ever done a new lighting system for them after you've done the LED retrofit?
I've quoted it, and I think we've done one.
Yeah.
But, when you have to spend another $75,000 at a church to get a lighting control system.
Talking about, yeah.
Not an easy sell.
Yeah.
And something they're excited about, but it can happen. So,
you know what we did? You know what's an interesting thing? This church had an issue. It was an old church, for Canada, it's old, not for Europe, but it's a, 100-year-old church or whatever, beautiful on the inside. And they came to us and we want to go everything LED. And a lot of the lights were out and all sort of stuff. And I came back to them and I said, you know what you should do? You should just fix everything you have. And we went back, we went in there and we just we fixed all the halogens. We changed all the sockets. We put everything back and everything because they had a lighting control system going with it and all sort of stuff. And I told them by the time you get LED in here, you're going to be into $250,000. And we fixed everything in the church for $60,000 for them and got it all working. And it was an LED. They didn't get a rebate. They didn't get any energy savings. But the energy savings would have been $20,000 or $30,000 a year. And the cost of the project would have been $30,000 or $300,000. And so they decided just to fix all their halogen lights and incandescent lights. Yeah. That's what we did for them. And they were very happy. So,
yeah. And a lot of times churches are lower operating hours and it's more about, it's not always about the energy savings. It's about the atmosphere and the aesthetics of the place.
Sure. Yeah.
And LEDs can definitely affect that in a negative way.
Yeah, for sure.
More so than positive. So as a whole, recessed can lights, if I run into them, I'm looking inserts for the most part, as you said too. I think they're at the right price point.
I'm a lot
point.
Of bulb changes too. We do a lot of lamp changes if the sockets are in good shape. I wouldn't say I'm
right.
all inserts, but you know, it is what it is.
It's just one of those applications where, you know, where I a lot of the price is at the point where it's acceptable.
Inserts
it's not like
cheap,
where you're looking
man.
At.
Inserts are cheap yes. now. I get flyers, right. emails from people with insert prices on them. I look at that, go, this guy's got 7,000 of those.
For less than a bulb sometimes, or the same
yeah,
price as a bulb.
I'm not even going to say, but sometimes I look at it and I go, holy mackerel, that's cheap. You know,
it's almost like it's a bulb. An insert is basically a light bulb at this point.
Sure.
You know, on recessed cans. So, yeah. No. So that was what I had on recessed cans. You got anything else to throw at it?
Nah, man. You know, sometimes, with recessed cans, they're a great little ladder to a project. So they'll have like, a company will have like, you know, whatever, 400 recessed troffers and this and that. And then they have 20 recessed cans in the front. And you just kind of slam some profit on that beauty. Love those.
Got to do it.
Job. Got to do it, man. Thanks for listening, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. It's another deep dive, this time on recessed cans. And hey, you know what? We don't know everything. Huh? So if you want to be a guest on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast and tell us what's what, come on, fill out the form online, comment online. We always respond to the comments. And we're very grateful to all you listeners out there and our sponsors. We really appreciate you. Without you guys, this show would be nothing. So thanks very much for listening from Michael and Greg. HighlightLEDLighting.com. That's HYLITE LED Lighting.com, baby. HighlightLEDLighting.com, Greg.
And we're talking about their compact fluorescent LED replacements. They replace pin-based CFLs. In today's episode, we talked about recessed cans. And a lot of the applications we see have plug-in CFLs. And what they do better than anyone is have options. They have omnidirectional, for one. You don't see a lot of plug-in omnidirectional lamps, and they have that. I mean, it's 360 degrees of light. A lot of them are 180. They also have those, and they have it vertically mounted, horizontally mounted, so they have you covered. They have a universal G24 base, so you can replace a 2-pin or a 4-pin with the same lamp, and they have multiple wattages so that it covers the existing watt. We talked before, too, that a lot of people say, this is my compact fluorescent replacement. Okay, what does it replace? An 18 to a 42 watt. No way. Highlight has three different options.
And not only that, though, but they also have bypass and ballast compatible, no?
Exactly. Yep. They cover it
all. You want to have all those arrows in your quiver because you never know what the customer wants. Not everybody wants to rip that ballast out. Sometimes it's high voltage. In Canada, it's 347 volt. There's a lot of reasons why the ballast compatible should be in the mix, and there's reasons why the ballast bypass should be in the mix, and there's time for inserts too. So go to HighlightLEDLighting.com. That's HYLITELEDLighting.com. And of course, this episode and every episode is brought to you by our association. That's right, it's ours. It's the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, the Lighting Dorks Unite under the Nailed banner. Greg, love being a member of Nailed. I've been a member of Nailed. I'm an on again, off again member, though. I quit for a couple years there because I was stuck in my ego. But yeah, you know what? Nailed's been a big blessing into my lighting career. I don't know about you.
Oh, for sure. It's how we met. Let's start with that. That's always a nice part. And now we get together with a great group of people that know the lighting industry in and out and have great discussions, learn a lot that you can actually apply to your business and improve on your business and ultimately hopefully make some more money because of it.
You know, there's so many smart people in Nailed. You know, there's so many, you know, in when it comes to the light in business and the lighting business specifically that are in Nailed that do things a little bit differently. And when you talk to them, you're like, gosh, you know what? That's such a great idea. You try to bring that back into your business. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't because every business is a little different. But yeah, you know what? Just being a part of Nailed. And, you know, I remember all the speakers and the courses and all the stuff that I've been through with Nailed and that. But what really stands out to me is the people in Nailed and the knowledge that I've been able to acquire and the friends that I've been able to get in the industry. So go to NAALD.org and join us. And of course, Greg, we can take as long as we want in the conclusion. What else you want to talk about?
I think that's all I want to talk about. We got other stuff going.
So I hope you enjoyed the recessed can deep dive. Thanks for listening. And I'm so glad that you can now finally see my face.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you.